Put your hands together, please, for Stephen Fluin.
Thanks so much. Well, good morning, everyone. How are you guys doing? Awesome. Good to hear. Thank you for joining me. See, I'm from Silicon Valley, and this is a little bit early for us, but I actually deal a lot with Europe, so I'm usually up at around 5 a.m., which is 3 a.m., so we're doing well here. So my name is Stephen Fluin. I'm a developer advocate on the Angular team at Google. And my mission here today is to talk to you a little bit about Angular at scale, as well as Angular in the enterprise environment. And so if you think about my role on the Angular team, I really have two parts to my mission. First is to help organizations and developers be successful with Angular. And second is to understand what's going on in the real world when we use actual IDEs, when we actually build real working software, and we have deadlines and all these sorts of nuances that come into play in the real world, and then reflect those needs on the Angular team. And so on a day-to-day basis, that ends up meaning that I do a lot of different things. So I work a lot with our enterprise partners. So if you are a large company with thousands or tens of thousands of developers, you can definitely reach out to us, and we are willing to help you and give guidance and suggestions as you're building things. I also work with a lot of our educators, so understanding the companies that are out there teaching and training every developer in Angular, that's one of our focuses, is helping them to be presenting the best content in the right way in a very forward-looking mentality. Another piece of my role is working with a lot of our Google developer experts. So this is a little bit of Google's program where we're trying to certify experts within Angular. And so we've got around 45 of these experts kind of across the globe. And we're really looking at empowering them to be speaking at conferences and helping companies with everything they do. So let's talk a little bit about what we're going to do today. So my goal with this presentation is to help you understand why Angular might be a great choice for you and your company. So I've given a lot of technical talks, and I'm happy to give demos, do any sort of these things if you want to come up and chat later. I can even help you debug a little bit of your code. But this is really more of a soft conversation about how do we fit Angular into our enterprises, and why are we doing this? And this is a little bit of a corollary to the talk I gave yesterday about how to do these sorts of things. And so this is higher level, and this is really focused on the business justifications for all this technology that we're throwing at our problems. So I'm going to go through this in four sections. I'm going to give us a brief introduction of what is Angular, make sure we're on the same page. Then I'll go into how Angular thinks about large scale. Then I'll talk about some of the large teams that are using Angular out in the real world. And then I'll talk about what sort of results that we're expecting from using a technology like Angular. So let's get started. So I always do the same presentation or the same couple slides here. And I think it's really helpful to people to have the same sort of starting base understanding of what's going on. And so I say Angular is a platform that makes it easy to build applications with the web. And you'll hear me come back to this idea of a platform, and then we'll also talk a little bit about what it means to be on the web, because we're really trying to own the developer experience for building any sort of front-end, client-side experiences. And I talk about with the web because the web has been around for a long time, but it's continuing to evolve, and the way that we use it can continue to get better and better so that we're delivering better solutions to all of our users and developers. So on the Angular team, we talk a lot about the things and the features that we should be building, but I really like how oftentimes we'll come back to some of our core values. And so these are things that we find very important and really things that we want to instill on every team member and every collaborator that works with us in the ecosystem. So the first is apps that users love to use. So this is really, we build a lot of software, but we want to make sure that we're not forgetting that at the end of the day, it's someone's eyeballs staring at a screen, having to do something with our application, or wanting to do something with our application, hopefully. And the better we can engage and the better we can reflect these needs of these users and really create a pull model for everything that we're building, the more successful we're going to be. So that's the first piece. The second piece is all about developer experience. We want to make developers happier. We want developers to be enjoying the process that they're following to build applications. We want them to feel powerful and productive and have mastery of the technologies that they're using. And then the last piece, which is really critical for a project like Angular, is we really want to build a community where everyone feels welcome. And this is just within the Angular team, but then it's also extending that out to everyone that builds with Angular, everyone that's ever asked a help question on Stack Overflow, to everyone that's contributed to our project via GitHub and via open source. So there's a few foundational technologies that differentiate Angular and really come from where we came from back in 2009 when we started this whole thing with Angular.js. So the first one is declarative templates. Then we have dependency injection. Then we have a component hierarchy, and that's new in Angular. And then we've got really the best of the web, or what we consider to be the best of the web. So let's go through each of these. So when we talk about declarative templates, this should look very familiar if you've ever seen any sort of Angular code. So at the top here, we have what looks and actually is valid HTML. So you're starting with a div tag. And then we're going to use a structural directive. So you'll see that star ng4. And you'll say let user of users pipe async. And this is a very short snippet that allows us to very quickly stamp out a lot of code. And so what's going on under the hood here is users is what we call an observable of data. So this is an asynchronous set of data that can come back zero times if the internet, for example, fails. It can come back once if this is a simple HTTP request. Or it can come back any number of times if maybe we have a long polling or live connection to a real-time database system. And that async pipe automatically handles all of the asynchronous events that happen with that asynchronous data and then gives it to us as a simple collection that we can then iterate over. Then we have this expression syntax where I can then dig deep into those variables, that user variable, and look at all the properties and just express those out as strings. And then we have two very basic things. We've got square brackets in the image there for property binding. So we're actually modifying the source property of the image node in DOM. And then we're binding to, for example, the click event of a button. And so we feel like these very simple structural directives, the property and event binding, are a very expressive way to build out very large, complex applications in a way that's very understandable and very maintainable for users, and we think really intuitable for users to write. Then we have the next concept, which is dependency injection. And so here, you're gonna see us leveraging the latest from ES 2015, so the import, so the module syntax. So you've got import HTTP from at angular.htp. So this gets us a handle on a specific service that exists within our application. And then below that, we're exporting a class. So we've got this about component, which is going to be a component that's going to live within our application. And then you're going to see we're going to use the constructor here, and we're going to refer to the object by its type. And what Angular does with that is now we're going to go ahead and look for that HTTP type, and we're going to ensure that we're injecting a singleton of that type into our application, which then we can use to go ahead and run that HTTP request to some sort of source object. And then we're saving that as the results. Another piece that's very foundational to what we do in Angular now is a component hierarchy. So if you look back to what we did in AngularJS, we had a digest cycle, which would basically evaluate all of the expressions that were visible on a page over and over and over, because every time we ran one of these evaluation cycles, there might have been a piece of change detection. And if during that change detection there was a side effect, we would have to rerun the entire loop, because we didn't know what effects one of those side effects could have, and we didn't know where we needed to go. And so by moving more to this component hierarchy, where you've got a root node and then you've got all of the child nodes, we can actually do change detection now much faster, more than 10x faster in almost every case, by just doing a single depth first pass across your entire component hierarchy. And so if you contrast this again with what we were doing in AngularJS, where you had things like ng-show, ng-hide, where we were just adding CSS to a lot of our DOM elements, now we're actually adding and removing these things from the DOM in a very VM-friendly and VM-optimized way. I talked about Angular as using a lot of the best of the web, and I want to call out a few technologies in particular. So progressive web applications, or PWAs as we call them. I'm going to talk about lazy loading, TypeScript, and then really some of the latest things from ES 2015 and beyond. So when I talk about progressive web applications, it's really important to understand that these are a way to radically enhance user experiences by making applications more reliable, faster, and engaging. And so PWAs are really underpinned by a new technology that exists in Chrome, and Microsoft announced that it's coming to Edge, and we're hoping it will come to other browsers soon as well, because it really gives a better user experience. And so this underlying technology is called a service worker. And so a service worker is a process that can live on the computer of a user as soon as they visited the page. It can be installed by you as the developer. And what this service worker does is it grants you reliability for offline and unstable usage connections. You'll see we've got on the right side there a network tab where we've looked at all of the requests that have come from a website on the second load. And instead of these requests coming over HTTP from the web, they're actually being responded to by the service worker. And so a lot of these requests, instead of having any sort of SSL negotiation or download time or any TCP connection initiation, it's entirely 0 milliseconds, right? Because we can immediately respond. We have these files. We know what to do with them. We know how to give them to you in a very fast way. And then all you're doing is you're loading it into the browser and into memory. So this gives you both reliability, because this works in an offline use case. We can have all these files cached ahead of time, or if the internet connection is unstable. But it also gives you a ginormous speed boost, where every time a user comes back to your web application, that all of that content can be available immediately. And this is part of a larger trend where we're really moving from just websites into more web applications, where I don't want to be doing a full round trip for every interaction for the user. And that includes even repeating the same page load when I come back to your website or web application the next day. We can already have all of these things, and they can all be faster and better. PWAs are also about making web applications more engaging. And there's really two ways that they do that. The first is push notifications. One of the powers that service workers have is that they're allowed to register a client for push notifications. And then the server, or you as a developer, can send a notification to a specific endpoint that then wakes up that service worker even when the user isn't interacting with the browser or their web page. And so this is a very powerful thing that applications have had for a long time when we look at the installed context, but websites have never had before. There's also other ways of building a deeper level of engagement. And that's really what we call the add to home screen or enhanced add to home screen. And this is something that Google is continuing to push extensively across the web because we feel like it builds better user experiences. And so what will happen is the browser on your device is going to use a set of heuristics to say, hey, does this user like this page? Are they engaged with this page? And this is things like, did the user visit the application on multiple times across multiple days? And once these heuristics are satisfied that say, yes, this user actually likes my application and wants to use it, we'll actually prompt the user to install that web application to their launcher. And so if I hit add to home screen, I will then get an icon on my mobile desktop, or if you're using something like a Chromebook, on the shelf of a Chromebook. And what will happen is that user will be kind of compelled to re-engage with that application. When they click on it, we can actually launch a splash screen instantly, so they're not waiting for the website to load, they're not staring at a blank screen. And then if you're using something like a service worker, you can load that application offline and provide 100% offline functionality without requiring any sort of internet connection. And so for a long time, I was working in mobile, and we had this idea of, are you home screen worthy? Because we all guard the mobile devices that we use and the mental space that it takes to add an application to our lives very carefully. And we feel like progressive web applications take our standard web applications and make them more home screen worthy. And we really want to expose those to users in ways that are more engaging and going to take us more from a transactional viewpoint where I'm going to visit once every now and then to something where I want to keep coming back because I have a relationship with this application or service. We also take a look at the best of the web as technologies like lazy loading. So back when we had a traditional server-based architecture, we didn't care how big our applications were, right? We didn't care how complex they were. We were going to go ahead and build our application with as much functionality as we needed, and then we were going to run it and give the user as small as possible HTML. But now, as experiences are tending to shift closer and closer to the user's browser, running on client side, because that's how they get that immediate app-like experience, and that's how we get better conversions, better engagement from our users, we have a big problem where we want to build these large, complex applications, but we still want the user to only take in the minimum amount that they need to run the application at any given time. And the real solution to this across the web is lazy loading, where we only load the parts of JavaScript that we need in order to run the page that the user is engaging with. And this is a technology that's built into Angular as a platform and really exemplifies its capabilities. Because we know what a lot of bundlers and what a lot of your tool chains look like, and we know what Angular routes look like, we can actually look at those things and use that to both split your code into multiple different chunks, and then load those chunks on demand as users are either trying to route to a specific endpoint, or we can do things like create our own optimistic caching strategies where, hey, I know this is a type user of type admin. Maybe let's go ahead and preload all of the admin routes because I think that user might need these things. But even if you're going to optimistically load everything from your application, it's still faster than shipping all of the JavaScript down in the first place because it takes it all out of the critical path. And so we can do very advanced subtraction using tools like Webpack, where you build your application once, and you put tools 1, 2, and 3 into your app module, and then you put the same tools 1, 2, 3 into your home module. We can actually subtract all those things out so that we're only shipping the incremental code that you need to load any given route. Another tool that we talk about a lot on the Angular team is TypeScript. And so we don't really look at this as a fully new language. What we really look at is the latest and greatest that comes from the web. So that's ES 2015, ES 2016, decorators, and beyond, plus types. And this is really foundational to a lot of things we do because it makes us better at helping you. Right? With a type system, we can do more static analysis. We can make your application more optimized, more performant for you in a way that you can't do with traditional JavaScript. We also look at a lot of the things that have come in ES 2015, and we find that these improve the developer experience dramatically, and so we've adopted the tooling necessary to enable developers to use these from day one. So you don't have to use any of these tools, right? All of these things you could write very traditionally. I could write out all my function statements, I could write out all of my arrays and do array decomposition manually, but we have new tools, right? The web as a platform is continuing to advance, and we feel like if we can empower developers to take advantage of these things, that's a huge win for everyone. So you've got things like arrow functions, which both give you a nicer syntax for declaring inline functions, as well as a different scoping model that allows you access to things like this, so that if you have an object, you can still access the parent's scope. We have things like the spread operators, which make it easier to deconstruct and work with things like arrays and objects. We've got method defaults, right? These are features that languages like C# and other languages have had for a long time, but the web has been left behind. And so part of our mission, part of our goal, is to help you take advantage of the latest of the web. And you'll also see us relying heavily on things like ES 2015 modules and classes, because these are more pure concepts that we can operate in, right? In AngularJS, we had services, which were a function that was a factory that you would have to invoke, and people really never knew whether they should be using a service or a factory, and that created a lot of confusion. And by replacing all of these things with the best of the web, as it is today, you can have things like just a pure class. And we're going to instantiate that class for you where you tell us to, and then we're going to make that class available to you where you need it using ES 2015 module imports and dependency injection. We also see that Angular really can live in a lot of different places. And so most of us are building applications for the web, so being consumed in a browser, but there's a lot of really great technologies that allow us to get that installed mobile experience. I talked yesterday about a company called Drone Deploy, who's building an application using Cordova and shipping it on iOS and Android, but they're using the same code for their web application, because as soon as we can stop building these things multiple times and still get that rich client-side experience, that's a win. And oftentimes, we still need to be building a web experience, and so just having a shared framework for across our mobile platforms sometimes isn't enough. We also think about desktop use cases, and there's a really cool tool out there called Electron. And what Electron does is it ships down to the user in an installable format, so you get an EXE or an MSI, that basically gives you a Chrome browser that's under your control and using the version that you specify, and a Node.js instance. And that enables us to build web applications that are interacting with desktop functionality like file system access. And so this is something that's very easy to install, very easy to manage on a network or in a system of computers, and you can still build that same application with the same code that you're writing for your web application. But you may be asking, there are other ways for me to do all these cool things, right? I can lazy load myself. There are lots of templating languages. I can do declarative templating. I even know how to ship PWAs. There's a lot of great tools that allow me to leverage the best of the web. But I really want to come back to the idea that Angular is trying to be a platform, and we're trying to help you with all of these things. We are paying a ton of attention to what's happening across the web as an entire ecosystem, and we're trying to package up each of those features for you in a way that makes it very easy for you to take advantage of them. And we see this across the board in tools like our CLI, where every time we launch a new feature or new capability, at first it's a little bit hard to use, and then we figure out all of the use cases from users, such as Angular Universal, and then we prepackage that for you in the CLI in a way that makes it easier to use. So we talked to a lot of different companies that are using Angular in the real world. And we've asked a lot of them, why did you choose Angular? And so the top five answers that have come up for us have really been that we are opinionated, we're trustworthy, familiar, we have a great ecosystem, and we're really focused on scaling in a number of different ways. And so let's go through each of these. So let's start with the idea that we are opinionated. So for those of you that have worked with Angular, you're probably very familiar with this. We're going to be pushing you into certain choices. And so while most cases, we're not trying to take away your freedom. We're still giving you the freedom and flexibility to make choices. We're pushing you into what we feel are best practices and simplifying your life by making a lot of those choices for you. And so one of those is TypeScript. And so by having types in the JavaScript ecosystem, we can do things like add language services to IDEs. And so we can take what is just a standard HTML editor and add knowledge about your components and about your data models so that you get autocomplete and you get error handling when you're editing an HTML file. So this is kind of the combination of understanding both the declarative templates and this very app-like model that we've developed. Another thing that we're very opinionated about is reactive programming. In AngularJS, basically we would spin up a component every time that component was loaded onto screen. But we feel like with modern applications and with the applications that we're trying to build and that we're trying to help you build, we really need something a little bit better. And so, for example, our router is built reactively by default. And so if you instantiate a component and you want to know information about the route that the user has visited, so maybe I'm visiting /product/32, instead of just giving you that information statically, which would require us to tear down the component and rebuild the component in its entirety every time the user changes routes, right? So if I hit next product, we give that information to you reactively. And so what that means is I can take those route parameters and I can stream them out to, for example, an API request, so that every time those route parameters change, I don't have to reinstantiate that component, I don't have to do all of that setup and teardown, but I suddenly get the new data and that propagates out to my template, and then in combination with things like the async pipe, all of that automatically re-renders for us. Another thing that we do very reactively is our HTTP library. And a lot of people are confused by this concept. So they're used to working with asynchronous data, they're used to working with things like promises, but they ask, why would HTTP come back as an observable, right? If I'm only ever expecting one response from an HTTP request, or 0 or 1, why would I want HTTP? And my answer to that is almost always starts with. Because with observables, you have a ton of power and a ton of features that you can do to manage the streams of data that are flowing through your application. And one of the most common things I want to do, especially when we're considering offline or unreliable use cases, is a caching system. And so by having this HTTP request as an observable, I can actually supply it instantly a source value, a start with value, that then renders synchronously to the screen anywhere in my application that I'm using that data. And so this is a really great example of where thinking about all of the data in your application more reactively can help you build a better application that's faster and more performant. Another thing that we're very opinionated about is that compilation should be done server-side. So in AngularJS, we had a compiler. It was tiny. It lived in the browser. And we basically relied on whatever browser functionality existed. And we threw some JavaScript at an inner HTML element within your application. In Angular, we've taken a much deeper control of that. We've taken control of that because then we can give you build time errors. We can say, hey, the types don't match, or hey, that component you were looking for doesn't exist, or you're referring to a property that doesn't match the one that you defined on the application. We're also opinionated about compilations because with all these new powers, we can give you, instead of shipping HTML that we have to process client-side and run those and spend those CPU cycles, we can run all those cycles on the server side, which then save your users time. And so this is a source map explorer, which shows you that we take all that HTML that you write, all that very kind of nice, easy to understand, easy to maintain code, and we turn that into VM-optimized JavaScript. And so instead of saying, here's a div, right, we're saying document.createElement, a new div. And we do that in a way that the VM, across all of the different browsers that are in use today, can do very quickly and can optimize for itself. There are also some things that we're a little bit less opinionated about. And one of those is bundlers. So the state of the bundler ecosystem is changing, and it's kind of an ongoing challenge across the ecosystem. So with our CLI, for example, we have chosen Webpack under the hood, but we don't expose any of that complexity to you. Because our thought is, as these bundlers are changing, we want to be able to automatically change things for you without allowing you to shoot yourself in the foot or make short-term decisions. But there's a lot of great bundlers across the ecosystem. And fundamentally, these bundlers are trying to solve the problem of, how do I ship the smallest, fastest code to my users in a way that's both easy for me to develop and maintain, so that I'm not writing code that looks dramatically different from what I'm shipping, but also that we're letting the tooling do the optimization. We're letting the tooling do the hard parts about stuffing in my CSS on the right places and add all of the right imports in the right places as browsers continue to evolve and develop. And so we've got things like Webpack, which is the easiest to use, probably is the least sophisticated in terms of things like tree shaking. Then you've got bundlers like System.js or Rollup, which are much harder to use, but much more powerful in terms of the way that they can make small applications. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we have Clojure Compiler, which is a compiler that was written by Google from doing over 10 years of this JavaScript minification, optimization, and bundling for production environments. We're also less opinionated about data. We understand that data is critical to every application that we build, right? If you're doing anything more complex than a calculator, and even if you're building a calculator, I'd really recommend you pull in some sort of data set about maybe monetary conversions and things like that. And so we're really focused on empowering developers, no matter what their backend is, to integrate that data and to flow it into their application. So whether you're using SQL Server, a real-time database like Firebase, whether your data is accessible via GraphQL, which is a really great way of declaratively saying, hey, here's the data I need, and then it will actually automatically resolve that data to multiple endpoints, including RESTful endpoints, SQL Server, other sorts of database backends, as well as document stores. And then lastly, any sort of RESTful data. So we've built in all the HTTP libraries that you need to access the RESTful data, and we're trying to make this even easier so that you can take advantage of things like fetch, which is a new web standard that is even faster and a little bit better from an ergonomic standpoint. So we've talked a little bit about why companies choose Angular, because we're opinionated. But now let's talk about trustworthy. So we've made, as an Angular team, commitments to a couple things. The first is SEMVAR, or semantic versioning, which is a very specific, very intentional use of numbering across our versions in a way that we feel makes it easy to understand what you're taking on when you update your version of Angular. And then the second piece is a predictable release cadence. And so when you combine these two things, what you see is that the version number of Angular is going to keep going up, but Angular itself is not changing. And so back in September of 2016, we had version 2. We had a very successful launch of version 4 earlier this year. Later this year, we're going to have version 5. And our hope is that people can really stop worrying about the version number and just know that they're working with Angular. And we're doing a lot to make sure that this works, and a lot to make sure that this is a great developer experience where you're not having to do the same level of rewriting that you had to do between AngularJS and Angular. We've also committed to a 6-month release cycle. And what this really gives you is predictability. So you know when Angular is going to be changing. You know when you need to schedule or plan for, hey, do we want to take advantage of the latest and greatest features? And so our hope and our intent is that we make it easy enough for everyone to stay with us on this journey as we continue to evolve, because the web continues to get better. We keep getting new features, we keep getting better capabilities that are empowering our developers and empowering our users to do awesome things. Angular is also trustworthy because we use it extensively at Google. And not just extensively at Google, but we actually have a very strong level of validation that comes from our use of Angular within Google. So across more than 200 projects within Google, we have Angular in use. And Angular, or all code within Google, is actually built in a mono repo, and we have a one version policy that says every version or every application that uses Angular has to use the same version of Angular. And so what that means is every commit that we make in our open source project to Angular is already in use and validated at Google. So every commit to master that we make lives in every project that uses Angular within Google. And so we can be really, really confident that when we make a release, when we give developers the latest patches and the latest minor releases and major releases, we know it's going to work, and we know it's going to work for an increasing number of use cases all the time. Another thing that we've released and announced is LTS support. So while we want to empower and we want to make developers really adopt the latest version, we've done a ton of work to make that easy, we understand that there's often compliance, regulatory reasons, or even just internal team structure reasons why you can't stay as up to date as we'd like to help you do. And so we've added the LTS tool as another tool in our toolbox that can help you as developers adopt Angular within your companies. And so our commitment around LTS is that version 4, and we're expecting possibly to have this in future versions as well on a kind of maybe TikTok style cycle, we're committing to critical bug fixes and security patches. So that you know if you can't update every 6 months your version of Angular, you can jump on version 4 and know that it's going to be supported for more than a year. because every version of Angular, every major release that's LTS, is going to be developed in active development for about 6 months, and then it's going to enter a year of long-term support. So we really feel like this is going to help developers, and we've heard a lot of very good feedback since we made these announcements. Companies also choose Angular because it's familiar, it's something that they recognize. I was talking with a developer at Forbes, and he used the terms, Angular feels like coming home. He was a reformed back-end developer, I'll say. So he'd been writing .NET for a long, long time. And then he had, for the last about 2 years, been trying to get into this front-end thing. He'd been writing JavaScript, right? He'd been adding DOM nodes to the page. He'd been pulling them off, manually tweaking things, using tools like jQuery, using tools like AngularJS. And then when he started using Angular, it started really clicking for him. Hey, we can take advantage of the latest of the web. We can ship these fantastic client-side experiences, but we can do it in a way that has this familiar application mentality. I can do this in a way that I'm used to doing with great IDE support for everything I'm doing. Working with a lot of our educators, I see that about half of the ecosystem that's learning Angular is coming from AngularJS. So these are more traditional front-end JavaScript developers. But what was really surprising to us was that the other half of developers are coming from backends like .NET. And I think this is a really exciting thing for us because it really shows that we've been successful with this application model in helping developers that are doing more traditional back-end development now do both that back-end development as well as take advantage of the best and the latest that we've got on the front end. Another reason that companies choose Angular is because of our ecosystem. And I want to give you a few examples of that ecosystem. So there are more than 800 different meetup groups across more than 50 countries having meetups about Angular. A lot of developers, when they get started with Angular, they don't know that this community exists, and they kind of work in silence. They work alone. But the moment that they reach out to the community, the moment they start talking to other developers, they'll immediately become far more effective. And this is something that we really have seen grow very grassroots and very naturally, but it's something that we want to support and something that we feel wholeheartedly is critical to the success of Angular. There's also a huge ecosystem of service providers, component libraries, dev tools. Someone even released something that they call the Angular IDE. So they took a traditional IDE and they added both our CLI inline using GUI tools, as well as all of the language services that we provide, as well as they added a few tools of their own to try and make it easier to become Angular developers. And we feel like this is a great example of how our ecosystem is really making developers more successful across the board. The last reason companies choose Angular is because it's scaled. And I want to talk about what scaling means, and so we'll get into a few different aspects of this. So when we talk about large scale, what do we mean? One of the ways that we talk about scale is via our contributors and via our base. And so GitHub did an analysis of the top open source projects. They called it the State of the Octaverse 2016. And Angular was actually one of the top projects by contributors. We find it a little bit funny that we are actually ahead of the rest of Google, which maybe we should be a part of Google, right? Another piece of information that we've seen is a Stack Overflow survey. And so one of the things that they looked at was all of the libraries, frameworks, and other tool sets that developers are using to build these great web experiences, what is kind of the state as of 2017? And what they saw was that looking at both AngularJS and Angular was that around 44.3% of developers are using these tools. And so by their count, we are the biggest framework that exists today. We also mean applications that scale to billions of users, right? So in general, this isn't really a problem in the client side because every user gets their own copy of an application. But we can even do things that help on the DevOps side of things, such as helping you create and configure CDN layers that cache and serve these applications in the right way. We can also do things like Angular Universal, where we're rendering your entire application on the server side in a way that increases the perceived performance for those billions of users. We also, by scale, mean many different types of users and modalities of delivery. I say this a lot, but you really often need to meet developers, or excuse me, users where they are. Right? We can build the best application in the universe, but if we have to make users come find us and do work to come work with us, they're not going to be happy and they're not going to be pleased, right? We need to come and meet them on their grounds. Do they like using mobile devices? Do they like using desktops? Are they on a new Surface, right? Do I have a very portable machine that maybe doesn't have a keyboard all the time, or I want the keyboard flipped back because it's a better experience for me? And so the better we can do in terms of scaling our experiences to meet our users where they are, the more successful we'll be. We also mean companies with tens of thousands of developers. One example I can name offhand is Google, right? We have a lot of engineers, and we've got very sophisticated tooling that allow us to build these applications at scale across 200 different applications using Angular. But then we're also doing the same thing with everything else we do. And so Angular really fits into all of those concepts very naturally. Angular is built in a way that can be modularized. It can be built by different teams, different divisions, but those teams can still be collaborating. We can be building shared pieces of code. We also mean tens of team roles, whether it's your DevOps people, whether it's your leaders on the team, whether it's your developers, your sysadmins. All of these different roles, they can have a piece of the Angular process. And we've modularized and we've chunked these things out so that it's easier to take advantage of, so that your designers, they can be just worrying about HTML and CSS, or even just the visual layer. Your developers can be focused on things like components. Your architects can be focused on how do we pull all these things together in various ways. We also mean large teams, right? And so we work with a number of different companies, and I'll just give a few here. So Angular really works well for large teams. Capital One had a huge presence at ngConf this year, so that's one of our annual conferences that the Angular team participates in. And they actually made these really cool t-shirts that I loved because it said banking on Angular, which is a really nice both literal and figurative kind of double entendre, right? Because they are banking, right? They are building banking financial applications for users that have to be rock solid from a stability standpoint, from a security standpoint. But then also figuratively, they've invested time and money into using Angular, and they feel comfortable doing that, so much so that they got these t-shirts printed up. And I'm still waiting for mine, so if anyone knows someone there. Another company that uses Angular is VMware. And so VMware, as we all know, has tens of thousands of developers. And so they've actually built internally a component library called Clarity, and then they've open sourced that to make it higher quality and more applicable for more use cases. Another company is ASG Technologies. So they decided to use Angular as their framework for developing applications. And so they, a year ago, they decided to use Angular across over 70 different projects, even before Angular was final released or the initial 2.0 kind of public release. And so ASG Technologies is building for a lot of the kind of Fortune 500 companies across the world. Another company that uses Angular in a very sophisticated way that I love to talk about, and I'd love to share more stories, but we only have limited time, is ABCOA. So they are a financial services company that services other financial services companies in the subprime market. And they've developed an extensive internal system that automates the internal collaboration between their teams across projects and libraries. One of my favorite parts is the way that they've embedded all of these tooling into Visual Studio across their company so that every developer has right-click functionality that exposes all of these underlying Angular systems and tools. So there's a ton more projects and teams using Angular at scale. I don't have time to talk about all of them. And one of the more interesting things is that 90% of Angular projects, based on companies we've talked to and a little bit of research we've done, are completely outside of our view. We will never see 90% of the Angular apps that exist in the world because they're being built behind the firewall to empower partners, to empower employees. And so while we pay a lot of attention to the public web, we can never even know how broadly accepted and how excited people are about Angular. One of the challenges and opportunities that developers face is that we've got lots of lines of code written in the older AngularJS, right? Version 1x. When we talk to companies like VMware, they have millions of lines of code written in AngularJS. And now we come along and we say, hey, we've seen all the problems that you've encountered, and we've got a solution. But that solution involved a rewrite of the framework. And so we've got Angular, version 2, version 4, and that's why we just call it Angular, right? Because the version number is going to keep going up, and we don't need to worry about it. But in order to help these developers carefully migrate their application code from AngularJS to Angular, we've got a tool that we call NG Upgrade. And NG Upgrade is really focused on letting you reuse all of the existing code while incrementally rebuilding your application. So using NG Upgrade, you can take all of the components, and you can write new components and services using Angular, and you can downgrade them to work with AngularJS. And then once you're to a point where now I need to be pulling in some of my AngularJS components into my Angular code, I can actually upgrade all of those components and services. And so we feel like this is a very powerful tool for developers because philosophically, all of those foundational technologies that I talked about are present in both AngularJS and Angular. And by reusing those skill sets and by reusing that knowledge, you're going to be a more effective Angular developer out of the box. So, and we actually understand this process extensively. at Google, we have millions of lines of code still written in AngularJS. And but what we're doing, and the Angular team's goal is really to help all of the active projects that are still in AngularJS migrate to Angular by the end of 2017. And the way that we're doing this is using ng upgrade. So when you look at tools like Google Cloud Platform or Google Analytics, and all these pieces and all these lines of code that are written in AngularJS, they are starting to write Angular code because that's a better, faster, more maintainable way of writing code, but they know they can't rewrite it all in one big bang. And so they've got this incremental process design. And we talked a lot about this at ngConf, and there's a lot of great strategies, and I'd recommend you take a look at, for example, Victor Savkin's talk about how to do this, because there's strategies such as going horizontally, where you start at the base of your application, you do it layer by layer. There's vertical upgrades, where you can start at one feature and actually go ahead and fix that entire feature and upgrade that entire application. But even if you just want to go slow, even if you don't want to update all of your code, we're still trying to help you. Because the benefit of doing this is that you're going to be writing faster, more maintainable code. And then, in general, we're going to be leading you into writing better applications. We have a GDE in Israel who I asked him about what his strategy was, what he recommended to companies when he was doing consulting that were taking on ng upgrade. And what he said was, don't worry about Angular, right? Focus first on your AngularJS code and make it work as well as you can. Use all of the best practices. Use all of the latest standards. And what will happen is, without even spending a lot of time focusing on the upgrade at first, your code will start to look like the code that we write by default in Angular. And so that's something that we're very excited about. So the last section that we want to talk about is large results. And as I said, about 90% of the applications built with Angular are behind the firewall. And so we don't have a lot of data on a lot of those. So if you have data that you want to share, definitely show me. But we understand the categories of success that we're creating, and I have a few data points that I'll cover. So I, for 15 years, was in enterprise consulting, where companies would come to us with problems, and I would help them understand the technology that they need to solve those problems. And so my cynical consulting days always helped me focus back on less cost, more revenue, right? At the end of the day, this is not what developers care about, this is not what users care about, but businesses tend to be focused on these things, sometimes very myopically. And we feel like Angular definitely delivers on this, but we do it in a better way. The way that we do this is we're really focused first on happier developers. We want code that looks familiar, whether you're getting into a code base that was written 6 months ago or 5 years ago. We want you to be able to write code that's maintainable and going to last for the long term. We want code that has lower cognitive load, so that when you're reading code, which we do 9 out of 10 times compared to writing code, I understand what's going on very quickly. And we also want to make you as developers look good. We want to make you look good to your management. And so all of the tooling that we're offering and all of the features that we add to Angular are really focused on empowering you as developers. I had a colleague that used this quote, and I really love it, which is maximize the amount of work not done, right? How can we take all of these tools and all these tasks and things that you have to do manually today and automate them and build them as part of the platform so that you can, without any additional effort, take advantage of them? A really good example of this is between version 2 of Angular and version 4, we actually did a ton of optimizations under the hood where we reduced the amount of generated code by about 60%. So without a developer needing to change a single line of code, we made your application smaller and faster. And this is something that we're continuing to look to do over and over again with every release of Angular. With ng upgrade, the developer experience is improved because you're able to keep your skill sets and evolve more naturally with the ecosystem while still upgrading carefully your application to take advantage of all these fixes and all these solutions. I used to, this was probably a couple years ago, I would get questions about AngularJS versus Angular. And all the questions I would get about AngularJS were already solved in Angular. And it was before we had done the 2.0 release, it was a little frustrating because people would come up and say, hey, I have this problem. I'd say, I have the solution for you, Angular. It just wasn't ready yet. But we're there today, and we're really headed for great places. We also think about better user experiences. So I talked a lot about PWAs as a way of driving engagement. But we can also build better user experiences, which will expand our audience. So thinking about the different modalities that we can deliver our application, mobile, desktop, internationalization. So how can we broaden our user base globally? Because we really are a global ecosystem of tools and developers and users at this point. And so if I can very simply add some IE10N tags to my templates, extract those out into an XLIF file that I can pass off to a translation house, I now have a web application that doesn't just work for me and my users that I know about. It also starts opening things up to entire new classes of users. We also focus on expanding audiences via accessibility. So while some companies are focused on these things from a regulatory standpoint, where they are required to, by law, provide accessibility, we also feel like this is just a great thing to do, right? Because if your users can use, if you can expand your users or your user base via adding these small features for accessibility, they're going to love you for this, right? Your applications are going to be better, and they're going to engage more effectively with your application. And then lastly, really focusing on conversions, because everything that you do as developers, you have some sort of goal in mind, right? We want our users to do something. And most of the time, the likelihood of whether or not they're going to do that ties directly back to the application performance. And Google's done a ton of studies about this. We're focused on ads, and we're focused on usability of web applications. And what we've seen is the time to load for your website for every interaction dramatically impacts the bounce rate and the effectiveness of everything you do in terms of whether or not they're going to do that next click, they're going to fill out that next form. And so making your application faster, even just a second or two faster, means that they're going to be more engaged. They're not going to do that task switching. I want to talk about a company called ShopStyle. And so ShopStyle only came to us about 2 months ago. It ended up on a radar that they were using Angular. And so we talked to them, and we said, hey, you guys have a really great retail site that's using Angular. And we actually found out they were already using Angular Universal. So they were using a lot of our best practices, but they weren't using PWAs yet. And we said, hey, why don't you guys try and use our tooling and ship a PWA? So then they spent the next kind of 2-3 weeks thinking about that and then adding a PWA very quickly to their application that made it work offline, made it more engaging via the Add to Home Screen button. And what they found was that users that launched their application via the PWA, users that used that home screen button or that shelf button, had twice the time on site. Right? So I built a retail application, and now I've got my customers and my users using my application for twice as long, just because they came through that more engaging modality. And this is something that we're really excited about, and something that we see really across the board when we talk to companies. So I want to come back to this concept of meeting your audience where they are, because this really fundamentally underscores why we're shifting from more back-end technologies, where we have time and we can render the entire page and then ship it down to the user, to client-side, where we want to give users that instant gratification. Every time they click, the data's there. When they try and load our web application, we don't care if their internet connection's any good. The data is there. They can do what they want to do by both PWA technologies, as well as just the concept of moving more of our code to the client side and building these single page applications. So I talked about conversions a little bit, and it's about speed and engagement. The faster you can make your application, the better it's going to be. And the more engagement you can get from your users, the better your results are going to be. One of the things that we do to make performance really great within Angular is we have a set of benchmarks that we measure ourselves on. And so every commit, once again, just like we do all the testing across Google, we actually do performance testing. And so we have what we call our deep tree benchmark, where we have a tree of about 1,000 components all doing change detection with different data. And so this is a really interesting way for us to hold ourselves accountable to this runtime performance, which ultimately results in happier users. Another big financial services firm was actually doing an evaluation. So they were looking at a bunch of different JavaScript frameworks and saying, how can we build the best application for our users? And they gave us a challenge. And they said, we want to render stocks on a screen that update every 50 milliseconds. But not just 50 milliseconds for the entire page. We want every stock to be coming in with its own 50 millisecond timeout. And then how many of these can we show on screen? And so this is actually a very tough challenge, because not only do we have one event happening every 50 milliseconds, we have hundreds of events happening every 50 milliseconds. So every millisecond, a new event is triggering. And we're actually running into the limits of the browser more so than the limits of Angular. And I think we got up to something like 800 different stocks can be showed on a screen, each rendering with their own data source coming in at 50 milliseconds. And so this is really about the power and the speed of Angular. In the real world, I hope you're not going to go ahead and build 800 stocks on a screen. I don't think that's the best choice for usability. But being able to do so is very powerful and very important to us as developers. I also feel like choosing Angular and being successful and getting the results you need is about agility, right? So we've got our developer experience, we've got our user experience, but as a business, I want to be able to change my mind. I want to be able to move more quickly to take advantage of market opportunities, or trends in technology or our users. And so using this kind of Google mindset of how we build software can definitely help make us better developers and build better applications. And also, we've got a set of modalities that we deliver in today. So we've got desktops, we've got laptops, we've got phones, but these modalities are continuing to evolve and change, right? One of the upcoming ones is VR. And as a project like Angular, we can actually add VR support for you without you having to do anything, right? We can give you a set of best practices out of the box and a set of tools that allow you to do this. And we've actually seen the community do this. So instead of rendering to HTML, they render to a web VR canvas. And so instead of using HTML tags like div, they would actually have a circle tag, they'd have a sphere tag, and then they could bind into those properties like the X, the Y position, the rotation, the texture, just using the same Angular concepts that we know and love, but rendering to a completely different modality. And so I'm sure that there are modalities that we haven't even thought of. Another favorite example that I have was at a conference where someone has a tech demo, instead of rendering to any sort of user experience that we're used to, they rendered out to a series of light bulbs. And so they could turn on and off the light bulbs by binding to them in an Angular context, just via a custom renderer. And so this really exposes some of the power of what we're doing in terms of taking advantage of and being a part of the future. So I want to summarize just a couple things here. So a lot of companies choose Angular because we're opinionated, we're trustworthy, familiar, we have a really great ecosystem, and Angular is really focused on scaled problems, right? Building applications at the enterprise level with hundreds or thousands of developers. We've also covered some of why companies have adopted Angular in terms of several specific use cases, what scale really means to us. We've looked at large teams using Angular in production, and we hope that you'll definitely join us on that journey. We've also looked at how developers and users benefit. So I hope that everyone out here will go ahead and give Angular a try, or if you haven't, or if you have already, let me know what you're building, and I'd love to share your story with the world. Thank you all so much.